Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I am truly honored to share the microphone with the most interesting people. Now, these are people who are business leaders. They may be virtual assistants. They may be authors, speakers. They're anybody who has a wonderful story to share about how they built up their business and how their advice and tips can help you build up yours. In fact, they are here to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. In fact, my guests are so compelling and so insightful that this podcast was recently written up on Inc.com as one of the best business podcasts you need to be listening to now, and has been mentioned on Entrepreneur and MSNBC. And our topic today, it's no secret there's money in small business with Tyson Franklin, who joins me today from Queensland, Australia. I'm so excited. This is our third attempt, and today we actually made it. We had technical difficulties like you wouldn't believe. So about Tyson, over the past 30 years, he has set up, relocated, and sold more than 20 businesses. And over this time, he has worked out what makes a business flourish and also what can hinder its growth. His book, It's No Secret There's Money in Small Business, is an Amazon number one bestseller. And his weekly podcast series, It's No Secret with Dr. T, is aimed at helping small business owners avoid the mistakes that he made when he first started out in business. Tyson is also the creator of the 365-hour mental and physical challenge. You can find that on YouTube. I watch it all the time. Tyson, hello. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I am so glad you persevered and you're actually here.
Hello, Denise. It is great to be here. Yeah, like you said, this is our third attempt, but that's what happens with technology. And it's a good example where some people may have given up after the second attempt. If this had failed today, we would have just keep coming back. I'm one of those people that I know if it's going to work in the end, you just keep going. You don't stop. And I think that sums up business in general. Is you got to know when yeah, like was it Kenny Rogers? You got to know when to hold them. You got to know when to fold them. So I'm glad we finally got on and we're on today. So it's great. Good to be here.
Thank you. I mean, we tried on our regular date last Friday, and then we tried even on the Saturday, which, by the way, you're a day ahead of me. I mean, you're in Australia, so it's actually quite early in the morning for you and you know, mid to late afternoon for me. And just about the time I said, this isn't going to work, we both just decided to give it one more shot, and I'm so glad that we did, because you are talking about something that's, I think, very important for people all over the globe to understand, and that is small business. One of the things I've heard you say is every big business was once a small business. And I think people lose sight of that. It had to start somewhere. Apple started, Steve Jobs, all of these guys, you know, you hear their stories. They started in a garage. They started in a one-man office somewhere. We all start somewhere, don't we?
Yeah, and I think that's the one thing that a lot of business owners, entrepreneurs, they tend to forget. They see everybody, they see the final product. You know, they see the polished product where they might look at McDonald's and they go, wow, that's like the biggest burger franchise in the world. And someone might be starting a burger shop and they're going, well, there's no way I could ever be as big as that. But McDonald's started as one burger shop. If you've seen the movie Founder, I don't know how close that is to the truth, but nearly every big business started as a small business. And in the beginning of my book, I actually talk about that. It's like the opening sort of chapter where even Nike is such a recognized brand around the world, but it started with a coach and an athlete selling shoes from the back of their car at race meetings. And I think the first year they turned over, I think off the top of my head, it was like $8,000. And now you have a look at how big they've become. Coca-Cola was another perfect example, where Dr. Pemberton, and he was a chemist who had just come back, I think, after the Civil War, and he wanted to come up with something that was different and that he could actually make some money from. So he came up with the Coca-Cola formula. And I think in the first year he spent, I think it was, might have been 70-something dollars in advertising, and his revenue was probably about the same. So he really didn't make anything in that first 12 months, and he could have quite easily given up. 2 years later, he died, so he never really got to see the success of it. But the next person who took it over said, wow, I think instead of this just being a local product that he was making, maybe we could take this a little bit bigger. And it just grew, and it grew from there. So I think people can go back and look at any huge business. Go back and go and Google them. Go to Wikipedia and have a read of the history of them. And especially if they're in your industry. So if there's somebody, could be whether it's medical, whether it's business, whether it's an accounting firm, you go back and look at their grassroots, where they started from, and then most of the times they're actually probably in a worse position than where the average business person is. They just had a big vision, and I think it's having a big vision, and you wanting to see your business grow is the key to sort of ignite things. Would you agree, Denise?
Well, yes, and I was going to ask you about that. So you actually were reading my mind, I think. Because my question was, what do these people all have in common? Is it passion? Is it just an absolute knowledge and knowing that what they have is a good thing? And they want to get it to a bigger audience and then, you know, get it out of their own geographical area and then get it to the world. So I guess my question is, do these people just honestly have a huge dream that they're not willing to give up on?
Well, I think it's partly, I think some businesses, I honestly believe some businesses have become huge, far bigger, worldwide than the original owners ever intended it to be. It was just the right product at the right time. And I do believe you create your own luck. So some people, yes, can be lucky where they just happen to have a product and the right person walks in, sees it, and it becomes a global phenomenon. But they still had to have put that work in for that to actually take place. And so I do believe some people never had intended for it to be huge. It just became huge, whereas other people have gone into it thinking that, you know what, I want to have a really, really big business. So my background is podiatry. So many years ago, I had this thinking that, okay, I set up my first business, made probably, the reason I think my book is so real is because I probably made every mistake you could possibly make in business. I spent money in the wrong places. I signed up for things I shouldn't have. I got ripped off by people that were working with me. I just dumb stuff. But once I started getting the hang of things and I attended seminars, I had a business coach, I read books. Back then I was listening to cassette tapes. So if anyone's not sure what a cassette tape is, ask your parents. And then once I started getting the hang of what was going on and my business started to become better, I thought, wow, now I want world domination. So that was what sort of sparked me to go, if I can do this here, if I can set up one business, can I set up another business just as good somewhere else? So where I live in Cairns, which is tropical North Queensland, up where Steve Irwin sort of came to his end, where I live, I decided I'm going to set up another business identical to the one that I've already got. And I want to set it up far enough away so there is no relationship to me. I just want to know, has the business model that I've set up work because it's good, or is it just working in Cairns because I'd been there for, say, 10 or 12 years and it was just my reputation? So Mackay, which is about 800 kilometres away.
You were trying to make sure it wasn't a personality business. You were trying to make sure that it wasn't just a personality business. Because, I'll go to my dentist, honestly. because I really like everybody in that office, including my dentist. I have no qualms going in there. In fact, I have been known to take a little nap in the chair while he's working around because I trust him. But would I go to heck no. No, I wouldn't.
Yeah, and I've been to coffee shops, I've been to restaurants, I've stayed in motels, and it's the staff that's made the motel. It's not the motel
right.
itself. So when I thought, wow, my business is going really well, I have one of the best podiatry businesses in the country. But is it good because not necessarily am I the best podiatrist in the world, but was it because I just was good at communicating with my patients and I got on with them, we had a bit of a laugh, and so I thought, okay, if I set it up far enough away where there's no relationship, and I must admit there was one other reason for doing it so far away too, that if it failed, then no one would know I stuffed up and I could sort of just tuck that away under the push that under the carpet, under the rug. So it was a two-part thing. One was really to see, could it work without me? And just purely around, I'd employ staff, put them down there, just let the systems run and really have very little input with it other than just making sure everything was running properly. I was not going to be the face of the business. Nobody was going to know who I was. But also, it was far enough away if it failed. No one in Cairns would know that I buggered up and I could just pretend it never happened. So we actually took a certain amount of money, we put it into a bank account, and our goal was, if all that money is gone, then we close the business, we walk away and say that didn't work. So we had a defined amount of money. We weren't going to put our house on the line. I wasn't going to risk everything for this because I must admit, I'm not a huge risk taker. I'm a calculated risk taker. So I don't mind trying things. I don't mind investing money in things, but I'd never risk my house and the lifestyle, my wife and children. It's just not me. So we did that. We set that up in Mackay, and it went through the roof. What took me 8 years to build in Cairns, I did it in 12 months in Mackay. And I went, wow, that was really cool. I think I'm onto something here. So then we did another one, and it worked again. And then we did another one, and it worked again. So at one stage, I had five, and they were all in Queensland, and they were 1,800 kilometres apart, which is probably about 1,200 miles, 1,300 miles in your sort of measurement. And so knowing that, so therefore I knew that it worked. But then all of a sudden I was away, I was out of town, and my daughter at the time, who was about six, rang up. And she said to me, why are you away all the time? And hadn't really sat back and thought about why was I doing what I was doing, what was my driving force? Was it, I used to say world domination is a bit of a joke, but what was it that I really wanted? And when I sat down and worked out what I really wanted, being away from home was not part of it. So I took a bit of a pivot. I sold off all the businesses and just kept the one clinic that was in Cairns, the one business, and I turned that from just being a really good business to being an absolute pearl of a business. That it became bigger and better than I thought it was ever going to be. So, and I think that's something that people, all business owners need to sit back and have a really hard think about is why are you doing what you're doing? And then, so if my thing was I wanted to be the best father and the best husband and best provider for my family, was me being 1,200 miles away in a motel room, was that really serving what it was that I was after? Do you find that happens a lot with business people, Denise?
I do. And listen, I am a high-functioning workaholic. I don't know when to stop. Fortunately, I live alone, so I can work whenever I want to. But I do take it to extremes, and I find that after a while I've exhausted myself. And then I catch myself thinking, well, what's your quality of life, Denise? I mean, you're tired. You're snarling at the poor cat. What's going on here? I mean, are you really enjoying this? So we all have to take a step back and find out really honestly what's the best for us personally, our family, our friends, our health, our mental acuity. I mean, there's so many things at play. It's not just building the biggest and the best. If we don't have any quality of life, You have to wonder why we're doing it.
Yeah, well, there's no point being the richest person in the graveyard. So to me, it was one of those things that I could have kept doing what I was doing. And yes, I could have brought in other people. We could have set up more locations and I could have freed up my time and had more time at home. But there's not too many people that I see. There's a couple, right? There's a lot of very successful people who have a great balance between their family and their work, and yeah, they've done it perfectly. But I was one of those people, very similar to yourself, that I'm a bit of a workaholic. So I had to step back personally, and it was really just a personal choice. Was it the right choice? I'm not sure, but for me, it was absolutely the perfect choice. Because I went on from there to establish a business in the town that I live as being probably one of the best podiatry businesses in the country. And then I sold it a year and a half ago for like a record amount for an individual sale in the country. So it was one of those things that I really got everything I want. I got this big chunk of cash all put in my bank account, everything paid off. I sort of now... Well, this is what I think is really funny. I used to always say to myself, when I was financially independent, you know what, I'm going to sleep in for as long as I want. And now that I'm in that position where I can get up whenever I want, I wake up about 4:30. So,
yes.
So I wake up about 4:30 in the morning, usually out of bed by 5. I'm either writing something, recording something, speaking to people overseas, and I'm thinking, hang on. When I was financially free, I was going to sleep in all day and do what I wanted. And the exact opposite has happened. So I'm loving life. That's the main thing.
And that's just it. And, you know, once you have reached that pinnacle, your brain is freed up. Your mind is freed up. You know, you don't have all this worry. You don't have all this angst. Like, how do I pay for this? You know, how do I make my payroll? What's next? So once you're freed up, you can wake up and go, ha, new day, woohoo. And I suspect that's what's happening
yeah.
with you.
Yeah, and I think what it is, it's exactly that, is when you have a lot of commitments and stress related with work and those type of things, I think it wears you down over a period of time. So you get to the end of the day and you're tired. I was having this conversation with someone only a few weeks ago, and I was just writing a blog article on it this morning, actually, before we jumped on the phone. And it was exactly that. They said, a lot of people will look at, you know, some entrepreneurs, and they go, wow, where do they get the energy from? They're never tired. You'll see them in the morning, you'll see them the next day, the following week, each month, they always seem to have this like limitless amount of energy, whereas an average business owner doesn't seem to have that same energy, because I think if you're not passionate about what you're doing, then it's hard to actually get excited about it, whereas I think if you're passionate about what you're doing, and it doesn't matter what it is. You could have a cleaning business. If you're passionate about that cleaning business and wanting to be the best, you will always have energy, and the people around you will see that energy. And people want to be around people that are positive, that are energetic, and they will recommend. I'd be perfectly honest. If I was having someone, a cleaner, come in to say, look after our business, I want someone who comes in who looks like they're passionate about what they do, not someone who drags their bum in and you see them, woe is me, the world's coming to an end. That I don't need that that negative mojo actually in my business. So, and you also, if you see somebody that's really positive about what they're doing, you will talk about them to other people, and therefore I think that's where more and more sort of referrals come from. So one of the other things I wanted to talk about today was just about, yeah, knowing what type of business it is that you want. Yeah, a lot of businesses, I think they set themselves up. They want to set up a coffee shop, so they set up a coffee shop, but they're really just copying what they've seen somewhere else. They haven't really sat down and thought, what type of coffee shop do I want to have? If I could have the ultimate coffee shop, what would it look like? Who would my customers be? You know, am I going to grow this really big, or am I going to just keep it local? And I don't think it matters what type of business it is. I think you need to take a step back and really know, have a vision of what your business is going to look like, and then try and take your business in that that direction. I think if you just set the business up because I want to work for myself, I think sometimes, because I know certain people who they've left where they were working because they thought their boss was stupid. So they go, I could do it better myself. So they set up their own business. And then instead of working for someone who is stupid, they're now working for a lunatic, which is himself. And where they were maybe getting paid $25 an hour. Yeah, now that they work for themselves, yeah, because I was working for an idiot who was paying me $25 an hour. Now I work for a lunatic and I'm working twice the hours. I'm getting $2.50 an hour. And that's what
a lot of small business
people, what was that?
I said, I've been there, done that. You're speaking to the lunatic in charge.
Yeah. I know, and sometimes I think that's how we should answer the phone. How are you doing? Lunatic speaking. But I think a lot of people, especially in the podiatry industry, the health industry, there's a lot of people coming out of university. They'll work somewhere for a certain number of years. And then some of them have been, some of them get paid quite well. And you can see the personality types of different people, where I've seen people who will work for somebody for a period of time, they'll leave because they think they can do it better, and then they go down the road and all they do is set up the exact same business of what they left. And there's nothing different between the two. And I think if you're just a carbon copy of what you've seen, then you're always going to find it slightly harder to build your business because people are going, well, hang on, I was already getting this service here. Why would I want to leave and get it from you? Unless there was something about you that really stood out. So I think you need to learn from where you've worked and your experiences, but you need to put your own personality and little twist on it. And can you do things that may not cost a huge amount of money, but might have a higher perceived value, but just make your business stand out just that little bit more than everybody else. So that was always one of my goals with anything that had, like, even our shoe shop, was just doing things a little bit different to try and make us stand out from everybody else in the same industry. So in my last podiatry business that I had, where most rooms will be consultation room 1, 2, 3, and 4, and everything is beige and old magazines, we went through it and decided to make our clinic a superhero theme. So we had the Superman room, Spider-Man room, Thor. Actually, on the toilet door, it had Thor. Thor's image there, because he's the god of thunder. We had the Batcave was our staff room. My wife's office was Wonder Woman. My office was the Invisible Man, because people hardly saw me. So we went through and we just went through and themed the place. And what was amazing, kids would come walking in and then they'd come out with their parents. They'd go, oh, that was really good. I've never been in the Green Lantern room before. And it was just little subtle things. The doors just had, every superhero has an emblem. So every door had an emblem on the door. So that's how you knew which room. So it became something that was just a little bit funny. And it was a good talking point amongst our team. But also, if one of our team was on holidays, and they went into a shop and there was may have been a money box or something that had Superman on it, they'd buy it and they'd bring it back to work and they'd put it up in the clinic. So it just became quite unique. And people started talking about it. They started noticing that we were doing things a little bit different. And it wasn't expensive to do it either, which was a really key part of doing it. After I sold my business, the people that I sold it to, they're a multinational company that's gone around buying up podiatry businesses. They've turned it all around. They're not really interested in doing that sort of thing. And I feel the business has lost its personality. It's lost its something about it just is not the same anymore.
Yeah, its uniqueness.
Yeah, and I think businesses they need to be unique.
Yeah, I do too. And listen, I tell this, I mean, I'm listening to you, and I tell people who come to me for business creation, for websites, whatever it is that they're coming to, and they always think they know what it is that they want. Turns out they really don't. And we do a deep dive into that. But one of the things I tell people, and you're kind of really laying that out perfectly, is look, I don't want you to tell me, you know, where you want your nav system and you know, what colors you want. We'll get to that. But what I want you to do is go deep into your imagination, and I want you to walk through the door of your own business and tell me what you see. And that stops them every single time because they haven't gone that far. So it's pretty amazing.
Is this,
you know, once you start going, you start peeling that onion, who are you serving? What do you want their experience to be? When you walk in the door of your own online presence, are you congruent? Are you offering up a lot of value? Are you fun? Are you funny? What is it that you want to offer? And unless or until you can give me all of that, I can't build you anything. Because I would deliver
I would deliver them. Yeah, I think it's
and I tell this to people all the time, did your web developer build you a pretty boat anchor? Because unless it's really reaching out to people, you've got a really pretty useless boat anchor. It's just sitting there, right?
Yeah. Well, I've seen some websites, I must admit, that you'll go to the website and you get there and there's bells and whistles and flashing lights and videos and
it's annoying.
But also I'm going, hang on, I'm distracted now. Am I supposed to be watching the video or this little thing just popped up down the bottom? There's a video going here. Next thing it's whistling at me. And I'm going, settle
right.
down. I just came here to try and find some information. Do you do this?
But you're not.
Okay, I have no idea where this.
But you're not.
Yeah, I don't know what to do
with your audience. Exactly, and that's a big thing. So it sounds to me like we have kind of the same kind of attitude about business creation. Find out what it is that you want to do, and then make it absolutely stellar and keep improving as you go on. But don't just throw something up with beige walls and say, okay, that's good enough. I'm open for business. You're not open for business. You just paid a bunch of money for something that's not going to work for you.
Yeah, and I think it's, yeah, when you go back to what type of business that you want, yeah, probably going back, even whether this becomes first or it comes second, but it's knowing once you've got your businesses, who is it that you want to attract to your business? Who is your client, customer, patient, avatar? Who is that ideal person that you want to get into your business? Because when you know what that is, then everything else becomes really easy. So, yeah, somebody I was talking to recently, and they said, give me a perfect example of, because I was asked the question a while back, and it said, who is your ideal, back then it was patient, who is your ideal patient? And I said, a female between the age of 35 and 55. And I said the usual things that most people would say. And they went, oh, okay. So would a 35-year-old woman and a 55-year-old woman have kids the same age? And I went, well, no. Would they maybe lifestyle be exactly the same? Would they be playing the same sports? Would they be in the same financial position? And then all of a sudden I realized, wow, that it was very beige. What I was saying was my ideal patient was extremely beige. And I said, think about it really specific. If that person walked through the door, how old are they? What do they do? What do they drive? How many kids they got? Are they married? And then another person I was talking to, yeah, he was saying, yeah, say your target market was astronauts, which seems very specific, you know, very niche market. He said, but do you want happy astronauts or grumpy astronauts? Oh, I'd want happy astronauts. He goes, okay, let's push all the grumpy ones aside. He says, do you want astronauts that have been sensible with the money and now in a financially stable position, or do you want ones that blew all the money and have got nothing to their name? I said, oh, yeah, I want ones that have got money. And he said, do you want ones that actually listen to you, or do you want ones who are really ignorant and don't listen? And I said, I want the ones that listen. And he said, so even if you think about astronauts, which seems very small niche market, if you dig down further on exactly the type of person you want, he said, you can see that there's a huge difference between the two groups. So I think when people are trying to figure out what type of business they want, if they go back a level before that and find out who exactly is the person that they want inside their business, and when they know that, it makes their advertising easy. It makes how they set their business up easier. So you give me a perfect example, and I'll stick with podiatry because it's the industry or the health industry that I know. So you can walk into a private medical clinic that is targeting people that, say, may make over $50,000 or $60,000 a year, might be married and yeah, financially in a good position. You walk into that type of medical clinic and you have a look at how it's set up, and or you're going to have a look at a medical clinic that is targeting people that are low income earners that don't have any money. Their surroundings are going to be different. There's going to be the way that they style the clinic, that what's up on the wall is going to be different. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when I found this one dentist, and I'll tell you how I found him, I had gone to, on the recommendation of a friend, I went to a local dentist, and the receptionist was just one of the nastiest little people I think I've come across who, in public service, if you will. And I pretty well told her I thought she was a nasty little person after we had several go-rounds, but she kept losing my records. She kept asking for information she had no business having. And finally, yeah, she couldn't remember my name from visit to visit. I mean, I was just, I don't think I had 2.5 visits. And the half visit came because I said, give me my records, I'm leaving. And she said, oh, I can't give them to you. And I stomped right past her, and I went right into the dentist who was working on someone else. And I said, I need to talk to you. I'll wait. But I'm not leaving here without my records. And I'm telling you, they were glad to see me leave. Well, almost immediately I found this dentist. And I never raise my voice. I don't. But when I get very quiet, Tyson, leave. Just
yeah,
leave. Everybody get out of the way. Roll up in a ball and pray that I disappear. But, and then I found this dentist that I absolutely love, and he set up his business very much like yours. It's not low rent at all, let me tell you. When you walk in, you know you're going to be paying for a high-quality service. You don't mind. You want to pay whatever he's going to charge because he is so good at what he does. His staff is so phenomenal. The place is clean. It's bright. It's such a different experience. And I can't even believe this other,
yeah,
I mean, this other dentist has been around for a while. How he's got patients, I don't know. I really don't know.
And,
so, yeah,
and I think every business is the same.
Perception.
Like, mm-hmm. I know, like our clinic, you know, I used to say, I'd have some patients that, yeah, occasionally may have said, oh, geez, you're a bit more expensive than the previous podiatrist who used to see. I go, well, that's fine. I go, but when you walk into my clinic, I go, how does it actually look? I said, yeah, we have a really nice big TV screen up there. I said, have they got a really big, nice TV screen? I mean, a big one, a really huge one. And they went, well, no, just a little thing that sits in the corner. I said, look at the magazines that we have there. I said, they are modern magazines. They're the magazines that you would probably want to go and pick up and buy yourself tomorrow because we update them on a regular basis. I said, we have a fridge sitting there in the reception area, the glass door on it, where it's complimentary water. You walk in there, you can grab a bottle. You can grab 5 bottles. We don't care what you do, but you can take the bottles of water. Plus, it had our business name on the water bottle, so we didn't matter how many that they took. I said, yeah, look at the furnishings that are around here. Everything is clean. The floors are clean. I said, we pay our staff more than we pay everybody else. That's why they're friendly and they go out of the way to help you. So, but we did all that because I wanted to attract that type of patient into my clinic. I wanted them to be able to see the difference. I wanted them to see that we were, yes, we were charging more than the guy down the road, but we're also offering a lot more. And I thought everything about what we did was better. But this also, when you know exactly who, like I said before, who your ideal client is, it really helps you then target your marketing to that client, and it saves you money. So instead of just doing a shotgun approach to everybody, if you know specifically that I'm after this person, now, okay, where do these people hang out? And they might hang out on Facebook all the time. So therefore, you might target your advertising or marketing on Facebook with a particular message because you know they're gonna notice that. But I found this was also using this whole avatar thing. Someone I was talking to yesterday, and they said they do exactly the same thing when they are employing somebody. So instead of putting an ad out there and having 50 people apply for it, they are really specific with the type of person they want, and therefore they write and design their ad specifically targeting that people or that particular person. When they run that ad, instead of getting 50 people apply, they might only get 2 apply, but those 2 people are usually the ideal candidate for that particular job, and then their only problem then is trying to decide which one to actually take. So I think that's a great tip that anyone, if you're looking to employ somebody, same thing, sit down and work out exactly who it is that you're after. And we'd done this ourselves when we were, I think the last time we were employing a receptionist, And we wrote on there, you know, we're a high energy clinic. If you're a couch potato and you like sitting on your bum, don't apply. And it was surprising how many people actually did notice that ad when we were actually running it. So yeah, so that's one big tip, is making sure you know what type of business you want. Make sure you know who your ideal client is, and then you can adapt your business, your marketing and all that, all around those areas. And this leads on to like another thing that I always talk about with people, especially when I'm doing coaching with people, is I always say that, yeah, numbers don't lie, only people lie. And what I mean by that is when you're running your business, and regardless of how it's going, always look at the numbers. There's usually about I think most businesses could pick 3, 4, or 5 key, you know, what they call KPIs, key performance indicators, to know whether their business is on track or whether it's sort of, not hitting the mark. And you use those key performance indicators to guide your future decisions. If you just rely on your staff saying, so how's business going? You can't always rely that they're telling you the truth. Have you found that yourself? Or you work for yourself at the moment, don't you?
Say what? Say it again.
So would have certain like key performance indicators within your own business to know
with
whether you're on track, whether you need. Yeah.
Oh, I have to, because I mean I have a fairly large team. And if I were to rely on them to say, everything's good, because they want to keep getting paid, obviously. But once I find out that, you know, something is not quite kosher, that maybe they didn't deliver what they were supposed to deliver, I'll have a chat with them. Second time, there is no second time. Yeah, I mean, if you're
I don't
not,
think there would be with you either.
No. If you made a mistake, tell me about it. We'll fix it. But if you're just kind of skating along and expect me not to catch that, you may be reading me wrong.
Yeah. I should say that with people that work with me too. Okay, don't try and lie to. If something happens, I'd rather you just come up to me and say, "Hey, Ian, that button that says 'Don't touch the button,'
right.
I touched it and I broke it." I'd be going,
"We can fix
tell
it.
Me if you touch it a second time. Yeah, touch it a second time, I'll probably chop your finger off. But at least you told me you're the person that did it." But I used to get frustrated when I'd walk into my business and something would be broken, and I'd go, "Did nobody notice this? Nobody could have told me a week ago that this wasn't working. We could have got it fixed before somebody just drove 200 miles to actually use that particular service." The other part, in my book, I talk a bit about the difference between statistics and KPIs. And some people don't understand the difference. And the easiest way to explain it, a statistic is something that happened in the past, doesn't necessarily mean that's what's going to happen in the future. It can give you a bit of an indication that this possibility of this might happen, but it doesn't mean it will happen. So statistics are really historical numbers. Your KPIs, though, that is what's happening right now. So you can't change this a statistic. Once it's happened, and you cannot change that. So whereas a KPI, you might have a goal that we're going to have 100 new clients come into our business this month. Now, based on statistics, we've always had 100 patients come in every January without fail. So we're expecting at least 100 patients this month. You know what? And we've done things. We've adapted things. We've got a better marketing plan now. We've got better systems. Our goal, therefore, is to be 110 or 120. So it might be you need 30 new clients a week for the next 4 weeks to get you 120. So your key performance indicators is at the end of the first week, do you have 30? And if all of a sudden you've got 40, then you go, well, you know what? Everything is on track. We are going to hit our target. But if you've only got 20, straight away, your key performance indicator can let you know, okay, I need to make a little tweak somewhere because we're not getting the numbers we want. And basically, based on that, we're actually not even going to meet our historical data from our stats. And that's the power of having KPIs. And that's why there should be at least 3, 4, or 5 things that you measure that let you know whether you're on track for the month or whether you're not. And if you're not, you can very quickly start making adjustments to improve things. And if you make an adjustment that makes things worse, at least go back to where you were. That'll usually help. And there's a lot of factors involved too. on why, yeah, one year you may have had a great January and another year you may not. It could be staffing issues, it could be new competitions moved in next door. There's a number of things that you've got to take into account, and statistics don't tell you that, but key performance indicators basically will. And every business will have a few. I know when we had, when I had the podiatry clinic, it was like number of new patients was a big thing. So with any other business, probably new clients coming through. But within our business, we made inserts for shoes. So that was also another key performance indicator that we had to turn over a certain amount per month. If we did that, we knew we were on track. If somebody had a cafe, it might be the number of people that come into the business, but there might be a certain item within that cafe that is sold as a higher-end item. And the more of those that are sold is usually a good indicator that everything is going great. So every business would have some key things that they can easily measure to know whether things are going well or whether they're not.
And what about repeats? I mean, you've got new people coming in, but I would think, not knowing, I know nothing about the podiatry industry, but I know, like with my dentist, I love that guy. I talk about him a lot. He's really a great place.
Yeah, he must be a good dentist.
It's the happiest dentist I've ever met. I mean, he just loves what he does, and it shows. But here's the thing. They stay on top of it. You know, they will make phone calls. Okay, Denise, it's time to come in for your cleaning. And, you know, you're saying cafe, I'm assuming that's kind of added on services. But this, like, do you need any teeth whitening strips? You know, they've got things that they sell outside of just actual work that they're doing on you.
Yeah.
And they keep track. You know, are you out of whitening strips? I mean, how are you doing? I don't have TMJ, but we'll assume that, you know, maybe I have some kind of problem going on. You do have all of your equipment, your rinses and all of that. They're very good about staying on top of it. And, you know, I may not be going in but twice a year, but sometimes, you know, I do need my whitening strips or the little gel or whatever it is. So I'll drop in. They say, they always know me. I'll say, hey, and, you know, they may sell me something else. Depends on what I'm in the mood for. But they're really good about making sure that I'm in their pipeline, I guess.
Yeah, and that's the important part is, like, say, whitening strips as an example for a dentist. They might know that statistically we sell 200 whitening strips every month. So January, we're expecting to sell 200 whitening strips. Now, if they get the 15th of the month and they've only sold 50, they're like, okay, well, that doesn't seem right. You know, we should be at 100. What is going on? Why are we not? Where is that extra 50? And that's the thing that if there's certain things in every business that can be measured, dentists might be met, because you can have how many new clients are coming in, but you also need to know how many past clients are coming back in as well. So when they're sending out recalls for people to come back for the 6 month review or dental checkup, how many of them are actually, what percentage of those people are coming in? There should be a key performance indicator for that. So in a that's what I mean. So in a dental business, they might have new patients, people coming in for 6 month reviews, dental strips. It might be how many crowns do they actually do? And these key points, if they can hit every one of their targets, then they know that the business itself is actually traveling well, and they can constantly just keep improving it. But if you don't measure anything, they always say as soon as you start measuring things, things improve. It's really funny about that if you don't measure it, you really don't know. You're only guessing. But as soon as you measure it and you have a real figure, then you can improve. Well, perfect example, in podiatry, and I reckon most businesses, they have what they call a conversion rate. And it would be if you took a certain number of, say, new clients, and there might be a particular service that those new clients come in for, how many get that particular service? So it might be, say, in dentistry, we'll talk about your dentist again, it might be certain people that come in with a certain problem, a certain amount of those people will get a crown. And, or in podiatry, a certain amount of people that come in with heel pain, how many people that come in with heel pain end up with orthotics or a shoe insert inside their shoe? Now, you might have your standard might be 70%. That's based on past statistics, it's 70%. Now, if you've never measured it, every person that I usually ask podiatrist, and I go, so what's your conversion rate for new patients coming in, say new patients in general, and getting inserts in their shoes? And they always say the same thing. Oh, somewhere between 85 and 90. And I go, and usually before I ask them, I'll usually write on a piece of paper 85% plus. And I'll say, I've written down what you're going to say. And I go, oh, yeah, well, usually, yeah, 85, 90%. And I give them the piece of paper. I go, how did you know that? And I said, because I can tell you don't measure this. So if you don't measure it, it's always going to be really high. Go away and measure it and then come back and tell me what it is. When they went away and they come back, usually it's somewhere between, yeah, around 50%.
Ouch.
But, you know, the standard is around 70 to 75%. So as soon as they know that it's 50%, they go, my God, I didn't realize it was so bad. But so as soon as you measure something, you can then start improving upon it. But until you measure it, you don't know. And that comes back to the whole thing. Yeah, numbers never lie. Only people lie. And it's not really so much that they lie. People make assumptions or they assume. And it used to be, I think, you never assume because it makes an ass out of you and me. You would have heard that before.
Yeah, and I'm thinking that a lot of their thinking is that, well, we're making payroll, the rent's paid, we're good. Do you find that, you
yeah,
know, as long as they're clocking along and they're not bouncing checks, that they think they're fine?
Yeah, and that's the only measuring point that they have is, do we have, and I must admit, when I first, before I understood any of this, the only way that I knew that my business was going forward was, did I have more money in my bank account at the end of the month than what I started with? So if there was $5,000 in my bank account, if we got to the end of the month and all of a sudden there was $5,200, I went, okay, well, we're ahead of where we were, so business must be going good. And as long as it kept doing that, but I didn't know where the money was coming from. Yeah, every business will have different items, services that they provide, products that they sell. I didn't know where it was coming from. Once again, if I don't measure where what's being sold, how can I improve on the sale? So, if a business is selling widgets, if they don't measure how many widgets that they're selling each month or multiple types of widgets, how can they promote? How do they know if they're marketing a particular product? How do they know whether it's the sales improve if they don't actually measure it? So I'm into measuring and just looking at a lot of stats, but there's usually always a couple of really big key ones. So in podiatry, if we sold rolls of strapping tape for people's feet, now I could measure that and I may see the number, but I don't use it as a big driving number in my business because it's such a small revenue area. So you want your big ticket areas, know what they are, be able to measure them and be able to tweak things to actually keep making them better. And that all comes back to, a lot of the times, systems within the business.
I was just going to ask you about that because you've mentioned systems a couple of times. And I can hear our audience going, what kind of systems? Where do I start? So I would love some advice on that.
Okay. To me, the first system that every business should start with is their customer, patient, client, whatever you want to call them, their induction system. When a person first walks into your business, and I reckon it even starts before that. When a person pulls up in your car park, what does your car park look like? Is it clean? Is it tidy? Is it easy to get a park? Is it well lit? And then they come walking out and they walk into your business. What is the front entrance like? Is there a dead bird sitting at the front? Yeah, if there isn't, so you need to go out the front of your business and have a look. Is there rubbish out the front? Is there a bin where people are putting their seafood scraps because they didn't want to put it in their own bin? And all of a sudden, is there a repulsive smell out the front of your business? A lot of these things people don't take into account. So then they've walked through your front door. When they first walk in, how does it smell? What's it look like? How does it sound? Are your magazines tidy? Is where they sit, is that clean and tidy? And then it's how are they greeted? So all that is, to me, is all part of your induction system. And you need to walk in your client's shoes and see what is it that they see. And I, every week, would go and sit in the reception chair, in the reception area, and I'd sit where the patients waited, and I'd have a look around and I would see, what can they see that I can't see from the other side of the desk? So to me, that's the first system, is making sure that whole, and then when the person greets them, it's always make sure they're greeted with a smile. What information do you need to get from them first up? If you're on the phone and somebody walks in, you still need to acknowledge that they're there. You can't just keep talking on the phone. And if the person you're talking on the phone is not as important as the person who is in front of you, so if it was a supplier on the phone, you put them on hold and you deal with the client. You don't just keep the conversation going with the supplier because they're a friend of yours. So that's the first system. But I think every system you write should be written that a 12-year-old can understand it. So, and when people say, well, what should be classed as a system and what shouldn't, pretty much everything you do in your business should be written as some form of system. And the simpler it seems and you think you don't need a system, the more important you probably need one, because it's then open to interpretation. And a perfect example, in my book I mention about making a cup of coffee. And you would think, oh, well, how hard is it to make a cup of coffee? But if you said to someone, can you just make me a cup of coffee? What size cup do you have? Do you have instant? Do you have ground beans? Do you like one of those Nespresso coffee pods? What milk do you have? Skim milk, full cream, lactose-free? Do you have sugar? Yeah, do you use a sugar pill? Do you have no sugar or do you like it black? So you can see, even just with a cup of coffee, how much that can vary. So if you picture other systems within your business, it's exactly the same thing. But always write systems that a 12-year-old can understand. So if you write a system and you've got to sit there and you're scratching your head going, oh, does that make sense or doesn't it? If you have to question it, then it doesn't make sense. That's the easiest way to do it. And when
you know
it comes
how I do
to,
it, Tyson? I call it the Homer Simpson effect. I write everything like I'm writing it for Homer Simpson. And I'm a tacky. I'm a nerd. I speak HTML, but when I'm writing out these things, Homer Simpson.
Yeah, and some people too, they go, oh, I don't have time to write everything. Then don't write everything. Record it, videotape it, take photographs. There was one instance in our business, there was this particular set of instruments, these five instruments that needed to go together to make up a nail surgery pack. And if you didn't have all those instruments in there, you couldn't perform the surgery. So nothing worse, the person would sit down, you've done an injection in the toe, you're about to perform the surgery, you open up the bag, and one of the instruments was missing. And you're like, great. One, you look really stupid. Now, you always could run around and find other ones from other bags, and you'd be tearing extra bags open. This problem went on year after year after year, and I'd bring the receptionist in. I'd say, look, it's written down. This is what we need. And anyway, I was going nuts. And then one of them one day just said, well, geez, I tell you, if you just took a bloody photo of what was in that bag and put it up on the wall, we wouldn't be able to make a mistake. That makes sense.
That's just too darn easy.
We took a photo, we put it up on the wall, and not once did we ever have that mistake again. And you sort of think, wow, how simple was that? So sometimes you can write things down and try and explain things, but if a photograph can explain it better, and all you got to do is say, see photograph of what needs to be in bag, then that's easier. So for some people, it might be getting a friend if you're doing the induction system and walking up to the clinic, it might be just one of your systems might be making sure the front of the business and the reception area and the waiting area or where you've got your stock and supplies and all that is always neat and tidy. And you might walk around with your iPhone and videotape and say, this is how it should always look. And you put that on and then save that, whether it's, Google Cloud or something like that, people can access and they go, this is how the reception should always look. This is how you greet people on the phone. And just record what you want to do. So you can use audio, you can use video, you can use photographs, or you can document things and write it down. And I reckon even a dodgy handwritten system that is crap is better than no system at all. That's what I believe when it comes to systems. Even a poorly written system is better than no system. At least it's some form of guidance. And as long as you've got something there, you can keep improving upon it.
And you would think that most people would understand this, but you know what I think happens? I think we're so caught up in just getting everything set up, and then, you know, bringing people in the door, whatever that door looks like. For me, it's a virtual door. And just saying, okay, you know, there are so many moving parts. I think I've got most of them. We're good for now. And then you get caught up in just doing the good enough for now and don't really move forward. And I think that's where a lot of people make their mistake. You know, they do it, and then they find they're overwhelmed, they're overworked, they're possibly growing quicker than they had anticipated, which happens a lot.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, there were no systems set up to begin with. So I totally get what you're talking about. I see this quite a bit.
Yeah, and you also, too, I think when you first start out in business, or even a business that's been around, you know, 20 years, if it's still very much reliant on the owner of the business to be there, and I think this is why systems don't get written, because the owner of the business is so busy doing everything that whenever there's a problem, everyone goes, oh, we'll just ask the owner. So they'll go to the owner of the business or the person that's been there the longest and go, oh, how do I do this again? And they'll tell them. Or the owner's going around fixing things up all the time. But this is why when some people have a business for 20 years and you'll hear them say, I haven't had a holiday in 10 years. And you sort of go, well, that's not something I'd be proud of. If you've had a business for 10 years and you've never had a holiday, then you need to change how you're running your business, because you're not getting a medal off of me. You're getting a kick in the pants for having it set up poorly. You should be, if you've got your own business, you should be able to take a holiday. You can't not take a holiday. It can't be good for your health. So, but the reason people can't do it is because they don't have systems in place and everything is relying on them. See, even with my systems, it took me a long time before I took a 3-week break, and we actually went to Disney. I went to the United States, went to Disneyland, Vegas, and San Francisco. And I came back from that holiday, and when I came back, I went, wow, I went away for 3 weeks, I've come back, and nothing's changed. Everything ran without me. I went, how cool is that? And from that point onwards, I've always taken a few weeks, a couple of times a year, away from work, because I know I have systems in place. They don't need to phone me or do anything. And plus, I'm not going to respond to any emails when I'm on holidays. So that's the importance.
Weren't you in Phoenix not too long ago? It seemed like I saw you in Phoenix.
Yeah, I go to Phoenix every year for a conference over there. But I'll be in Philadelphia this July for a podcast movement, and then I'll be back in Phoenix again in October for this conference that I go to every year.
Well, if you ever get to Louisiana and New Orleans, let me know.
New Orleans. Never been down that way. I know.
You know,
I was
not the same since the storm, but you know, it's not the same as it was, but it's drying. But after Hurricanes Katrina and Rita kind of ripped through, the New Orleans it's different.
Yeah, even where we are in Cairns, we same thing. We get the hurricanes, or the cyclones that we call them, hurricanes that you call them. Yeah, we always get at least one a year that sort of comes through, but this town is just built for it. It's hard to knock it down. So, we're almost out of time. This has gone really quick, actually. I just think anyone listening to this, the big part, you need to have systems. You need to know the type of business that you want to have. You need to know the type of client that you want to attract, and you need to remember that every big business was once a small business who actually got all this stuff right, and then basically just kept growing it. And then they had good marketing, then they had a marketing plan in place as well, which we don't really have time to be talking about marketing too much.
Why don't you come back, Tyson? I would love for you to come back, you know, maybe later in the spring, and we can talk about the marketing pillars, because I think it's important.
Yeah, I would love to, because the marketing pillars are, I'll quickly just run through the six of them, just give people a taste, is every business will have professional referrers, non-professional referrers, internal marketing, external marketing, what I call verbal marketing, and online marketing. So I look at there's six pillars that if you can be doing something in every one of those pillars, you're always going to be attracting people to your business, and your business is going to constantly grow. But yeah, I'd love to come back and talk about that more.
Oh, good. Well, listen, we are out of time. We've got about 10 seconds before we stop going live. We'll still be recording. But where can people find you? Taryn Second just got the call. Where can people find you on the web?
My website is tysonfranklin.com, so TYSONFRANKLIN.com. And, they find me there, Facebook, Tyson E. Franklin, Instagram, all the Instagram and Twitter is TysonFranklin66. So, yeah, I'm all over the place. And the podcast, yeah, It's No Secret with Dr. T, which is where I have a bit of fun, talk to other business people, and we have a bit of a chuckle through it. And I don't talk as much on my own podcast.
I try not to either. I mean, for me, it's all about the guest. But every once in a while, I'll get, you know, all excited. I have a question. So, yeah, I totally get that. Tyson, thank you so much. And I do want you to come back in the spring. I'll communicate with you by email as soon as we're done. But it has been a pleasure speaking to you. And I'm so glad you were able to persevere and work through the technical difficulties that we had. And, you know, and I thank you for all of the wonderful tips and the advice that you've shared with our audience. So today's episode was sponsored by my company, Your Office on the Web. If you're looking for full-on business creation services such as web development, virtual assistants, online business management, social media marketing, and honestly so much more, if you can think it, we can do it, please visit yourofficeontheweb.com. And be sure to look for us in iTunes. Just type in either Tyson's name, Tyson Franklin, or my name, Denise Griffiths, or your partner in Success Radio, and take us along on your success journey. Tyson, thank you.
No, thank you, Denise. Thank you for having me on the show. This has been great.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottogovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.